If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
My dad was a wheelman for the mob. Part 1. The Mariani family had lived in this country for generations. We were a loud and proud bunch from the boot. Everyone always stereotypes Italian immigrants as brutish thugs, or that we were all connected. Unfortunately, my family liked to live up to those stereotypes. From the moment we stepped off the boat, it seemed like we were fine-tuned to trouble. My great-grandfather got his start as a bootlegger, right on the tail end of Prohibition. Vincenzo, the Wall, Mariani, my grandfather, a respected capo and one of the five families. Which leads us to my father, Frank Sr., who never really had the temperament or fortitude for the life. A fact that Papa Vincenzo respected, all things considered. Still, it was different back then. He was expected to keep up appearances, make like he was grooming an heir. So, he and Dad came to an understanding. Dad would make small collections, drive some friends around on errands. It would all work out, as long as he didn't ask any questions. Dad wasn't stunned. He had some inkling about what was happening on those drives. This went on for a few years, and ended somewhat abruptly. My father moved away and distanced himself from that part of the family. We rarely saw the black sheep Mariani unless it was for a wedding or a funeral. The last time I saw Papa Vincenzo was a few weeks ago at my cousin Vincent's funeral, actually. He went around the room shaking hands and offering condolences, gabbing with anyone who would indulge him. He and Dad said few words to each other, and it was then I decided I needed to get the full story of their fallout. That night, I cornered him in the kitchen, asking him why he was so cold to his own father. I laid on the guilt heavy on him, but he scoffed at that.
When I was your age, if I talked to my father like that, they would have found me in 7 different dumpsters, he exclaimed.
That probably wasn't too far off from the truth. I urged him on, and he got quiet, dwelling on the past. Finally, he spoke up.
Frank, did I ever tell you about some of the jobs I did for my old man?
There was a grave tone in his voice. He went on to tell me a few stories from his time North Jersey. They fascinated me. Some of it sounded so outlandish. He told me about the first time he went on a collection run. He didn't have his own set of wheels yet, and Papa Vincenzo loved his son very much, but not so much to let him drive his 1958 Cadillac. He ended up showing up at the brownstone of Polly Caruso, hat in hand, meekly asking if he could use his car for a gig. When Polly was beside himself, smacking himself across the head as he threw Dad his keys. Polly drove a ragged brown Aspen, a permanent dent in the hood from some drunken brawl down at Cindy's. They got in, and Polly pointed down the road, and they set off on his first collection run. For this first one, Dad reiterated, he didn't leave the car. They traveled all around town, sometimes circling stores 3 or 4 times before Polly had him slam on the brakes. He would calmly get out of the car and enter whatever bar or bakery they had parked themselves in front of. Dad would hear the ringing of a bell and some store owner loudly welcoming in Polly, who took in this wealth and good cheer with glee. It would often be a few minutes before he would come back out, tucking something into his pocket. He was all smiles with the owner when he would leave, sharing a laugh or a pat on the back with them. But the moment he set his eyes back on the Aspen, his expression would stone over, those beady eyes of his long since losing their soul. Only once that day did a collection take long. It was their second to last stop of the day, a bait and tackle shop that had just opened up. Polly's face darkened more than usual as they pulled up, and he saw the owner twiddling his thumbs at the register. He pointed at him with such force, it was like he expected the owner to vaporize with a glare.
"This gentleman," Polly explained, "is always short."
Polly slammed the car door shut in a huff and made his way inside. Now, Polly wasn't a very tall man. He was about 5'4", bit of a beer gut, and had the face of a century-old bulldog. He also had the temper as one as well. Dad could see the shop owner's face explode in terror as Polly strode over to him as he shot that shark-toothed grin at the man. He couldn't hear what they were saying. Polly was simply nodding as the man spun some yarn, gesturing to his register and the empty store around him. Polly seemed understanding and took the man by the shoulder and led him to the back. It was then my father noticed Polly had spun the closed sign around when he had entered. It was about a half an hour before Polly emerged, like a ghoul hiding in the shadows. He came out of an alleyway, glancing up and down the street in a paranoid fashion before waltzing back into the Aspen, huffing and puffing. Dad noticed Polly's knuckles were throbbing and raw, but said nothing.
"Nice enough guy. Shame his business ain't taken off like he thought it would," Polly said, cutting into the tension in the air like a butcher swinging his cleaver.
"Didn't see him come out of the back," Dad mumbled. Polly gave him a side eye.
"I was helping him do some inventory in the back. He took a bad fall. Told him to take the day, ice his leg a little,"
Polly remarked casually.
"I'm a helpful guy. You know that, right, Frankie?"
Polly asked him, a deadpan look on his face. My dad sputtered and tried to reply, but Polly laughed, jabbing him in the gut playfully.
"You're a good kid. Pull up to that butcher shop around the corner. I'll buy you a gyro."
And that was the end of that. He never brought up the tackle shop after that. That shop would end up going under a few months later. Some of Polly's associates had come in and ransacked the place, taking everything but the copper wiring. He never heard about what happened to the owner, but he could imagine, and left it at that. Dad did well as a driver, having a few regulars who requested him specifically. They tipped big and treated him well, if for no other reason that he was the boss's son. Eventually, Father was able to afford his own set of wheels, red gaudy-looking Vega. That car was Dad's pride and joy and had very strict rules about it that he enforced on the wise guys. One of these rules was no carpets. Before I could ask, Dad explained the origin of that rule. One night he got a call from Polly, a friendly but strained tone in his voice. He knew it was late, but he needed him to come pick him and his buddy up from a club in Newark. Dad knew by now not to argue, so he hopped in his car and headed to some sleazy nightclub. He went around back and saw Polly standing there with his buddy, Sal Valentine. Sal had the nickname Waddles due to the case of gout he had that got so bad he ended up having half of his left foot amputated. Polly saw my dad pull up and reached for something behind his back, relaxing only when he saw who it was. Sal waddled up to the passenger side and got in, reeking of cheap booze and cheaper women.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, Frankie boy, how's your rash?
He joked.
You look good. You been hitting the gym? Important for a kid your age. Gotta stay in shape for the ladies, huh?
He had a crazed look in his lazy eyes, but Dad met his gaze and held it. Though out of the corner of his eye, he noticed Polly lunging something behind the Vega and popped the trunk.
I tell you, Frank's got it easy being young. Whole life ahead of you. Some people don't even know what they got till they lose it, you know?
Sal was rambling now, and Polly overheard him, slamming the trunk and heading to the back seat, snapping his fingers. He flashed Sal a smile as he came in.
Hey, Frank, sorry to disturb your beautiful sleep there, but, Waddles over here got a bit too much and lost his keys.
Sal smiled sheepishly, grinding his teeth at the mention of his hated name.
No problem, man. You guys heading home?
Dad offered.
Well, we need to make a quick stop first down by the docks.
Down by the docks, huh? Dad grumbled as he started the engine.
Yeah, left some paperwork back there, Sal countered.
Polly shot him a look, and he snapped shut real quick. The drive over to the docks was unusually quiet. It was about 1 a.m., the roads devoid of travelers, and the cops had pretty much packed it in for the night. The radio droned on, playing some quiet melody that Dad couldn't quite place. He was so focused on that, he didn't even hear the light thumping coming from the back. Polly heard it before him, and from the rear view, he could see all the color drain from his face. He heard a louder thump now, more deliberate. Dad raised his eyebrows. Besides him, Sal glanced out the window, ignoring the elephant in the trunk.
What is that noise?
He said, watching Polly in the rearview.
He shrugged off the question. You see the game last night? Oh, Brian took a frickin' header, huh?
He said all chummy. More thumping as Sal shifted next to him.
A lot of potholes on the road, Frankie. Gotta watch out, you'll ruin your suspension.
He spoke. Polly looked like he wanted to strangle him. Against his better judgment, Dad pulled off to the side of the road. He could see Dock 55 in the distance, massive overhead cranes marking the promised land. The thumping became frantic now, panicked even. Polly threw up his hands as Sal got out of the car.
What the hell is back there? Dad asked plainly. Nothing. Old carpet, don't worry about it.
Polly mumbled as Sal popped the trunk. A muffled voice cried out from the back as Sal began shushing insistently.
Pretty chatty for a carpet,
Dad remarked. There was a smacking sound from the back as the carpet began to cry out, a little less muffled now.
Waddles, you limp-wristed turd, you let me out of here right now or I'll...
Waddles silenced the carpet with a solid left hook and gave him three more for good measure. The trunk slammed shut behind him and Sal came back, wincing as he held his hand. Dad clucked his tongue and turned the radio off, facing Polly. Polly held a facade of a mean bastard, but his eyes sang a tragic tale of embarrassment and guilt, a rarity for a man like him.
"Does my father know you have Antonio Petrelio in a carpet?" he asked him, not a hint of fear in his voice as he stared down Polly.
"It would be prudent if he didn't," Polly finally admitted.
My father simply nodded and pulled back onto the road. By design, of course, no one would dump enough to loiter around Dock 55 after hours. It was an open secret that 55 was where Mariani family problems went to disappear. No questions asked. You just secured your luggage in a container marked with a red X, and in the morning a cleaner came in and ferried them out to sea. Dad sat in the car as Polly and Sal loaded up the carpet, never to be seen or spoken of again. Polly pulled him aside after the fact, apologizing profusely as he promised he wouldn't pull that stunt again. Polly produced a wad of hundreds out of thin air, successfully bribing my father to not utter a word of this to Vincenzo. Sal didn't say anything after the fact, though he did give the warehouse one smug look as he limped over back to the Vega. None of this would matter in the long run to my father, though a few days later he did find a few specks of blood in his trunk, and he spread the word to Paul. No carpets. Dad went on to say that he never saw too much of Waddles afterwards, and never did get a clear picture of what went on that night. He and Polly drifted apart a few weeks after the carpet incident. Sal up and vanished. He was never spoken of again, save for the occasional crass joke in his honor. The leading theory Dad had was Waddles was given up as a sacrificial lamb to appease the Petriello crew, who never did shut up about the missing Antonio. Such was life back then. You could lose yours casually by the drop of a hat. This was the par for the course things he dealt with, but in a hushed voice, he explained things got weirder at times. One time, he was picking up two guys from a heist. Now, I say heist because, basically, it was two schmucks who had got the bright idea to hold up a truck bound for the Natural History Museum. They figured they would stop in outside of town, stuff the Vega with loot, and drive off into the sunset. It was a late Friday afternoon. The two schmucks sunk in the back of the Vega, stockings masking their adrenaline-spiked panic of what they were about to do. My father was bored with it. Wasn't his first heist, and really, he was just doing a favor for one of his regulars. Schmuck number one was in the red tracksuit, being the son of his regular. The truck came over the horizon, and Dad jerked the Vega forward, cutting it off. The schmucks jumped out of the car, guns drawn and at the ready. He watched as schmuck number two held up the driver, a black-bearded man who was more pot than belly, while schmuck number one went behind it. It was taking a good while for him to come around the bend with the goods, and Dad was forced to hike up his own ski mask and investigate. He came around back and saw John, the schmuck, standing there confused as all hell, crowbar in one hand and an empty sack in the other. It turned out the two criminal masterminds failed to vet what would actually be on the truck. They heard history and thought old paintings and fabled jewels. The truck was filled to the brim with ancient Egyptian artifacts and larger-than-life stone statues of animals and pharaohs past. John was standing in front of an open shipping crate, the gold-plated death mask of an old king staring up at him with painted eyes. Dad told him to grab something and let's go. John reached into the crate and filled it with something. The ill-fated heisters made their getaway in the Vega, speeding off into the distance towards safe harbor. John sat in the back, rummaging through the sack. He had grabbed some animal-headed pots and a statue of Bastet. Nothing no one in the circle really had any clue how to move. My dad's regular was embarrassed, and the idiots laid low as they sat there on their stolen goods. The rest of this my dad overheard through various sources and hushed conversations. John and Schmuck kept the basket statue, hung it over his mantle. That day forward, every night a cat would creep up in his window and stare at him. He began having vivid nightmares of the dead rising from the grave, wrapping him in gauze and dragging him to hell to face judgment. John became jumpy and flaky, staying cooped up in his room rather than the risk of his bizarre dreams becoming reality. He would see a black cat, eyes yellow and hungry, gaze upon him from his bedroom window. He chased it off at first, but it just kept coming back. His father had enough of this foolishness and ordered some guys up to his apartment to drag him out of the house to get some air. When they arrived, they reportedly heard screaming and bursted into his place, only to find the window open and a splash of blood near it. At first, they thought that he had finally lost it and jumped or slit his own wrists or something. They went to the window and looked down at the alleyway, seeing nothing but a black cat licking its paw. The stolen statue was gone from the mantle, and much like John, the schmuck was never seen again. I begged my father to tell me more, but he said that was enough for one night. He told me to catch him when he was in a better mood. Well, I just got back from the store with a bottle of his favorite grappa, so hopefully I could coax that better mood out of him and come back with more tales.